This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The U.S., you know, spends billions on what it calls cybersecurity, and lawmakers say it's still not enough. That's the development of defenses to keep hackers out of sensitive computer systems and the development of weapons as well. That's chunks of computer code and other things which take advantage of the deep vulnerabilities of computer operating systems, those are the things that are always updating themselves on your phone and your laptop. Now, one such deep code hacking weapon is called Stuxnet, and you may have heard of it. It was developed by the NSA and Israel and some others jointly. It was reportedly used to disrupt Iranian nuclear systems back in 2010, and it's still around. But now a group calling itself the Shadow Brokers claims to have stolen a similar and potentially much more dangerous NSA software weapon, a piece of which has been publicly posted. And they are now hosting an auction online, a Bitcoin auction online, to release all of the files that they claim to have. Some of the NSA's most guarded files have most likely been compromised. True? False? We don't know the exact answer to that, but here to help us are Nick Weaver, researcher at the International Computer Science Institute, and Stephen Levy, editor-in-chief of Backchannel. Nick, Stephen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Nick, all the hacker swagger aside and the sort of bad Russian-sounding texts that are coming from this group called Shadow Brokers, what can we make of the source and the significance of this?
Well, the source is playing total theater with the auction. I'll get into that later. But the content is real, and the message is real. The content is, we hacked a whole bunch of top secret NSA tools. We don't know how they got them yet, but they're saying, hey, we got them. Hey, we want the whole world to know we got them. And the auction is a blind for a specific threat of, hey, there's a whole bunch of additional material we can release in a nanosecond.
So the assumption is the person who would buy this in the auction is the NSA, and it's more of a hostage situation than it is any kind of a commercial transaction.
The auction itself is actually a complete distraction. It's like Bitcoin is so traceable. It's like asking to be paid in marked sequential new bills with a radio receiver on them. So the auction is entirely designed to distract from them distributing not one encrypted file, but two. One which they provided the password, which is all the firewall tools, and the other which is secret to the world, but everybody who downloaded the files got both. So all the shadow brokers need to do to release that file to the world is a single tweet.
Interesting. All right. So Stephen Levy, what would these strange tools do? They get into doors of computers that are undefended or difficult to defend?
Sure. They're hacking weapons. They're things that increase the powers and make them the superpowers of people who ordinarily would be, you know, moderately talented malfeasant hackers. They can make them into super hackers because, you know, they provide ways to get behind firewalls, or if you're behind a firewall, they allow you to get more access to everything within a firewall, like Snowden did. So it's a dangerous thing to be out in the world.
Nick, is this the ultimate hacking tool, something that stays in the computer and watches everything, but can also interface with hardware and cause it to, you know, spontaneously combust at your desk or destroy a printer or send an airplane down to the ground?
No, and in fact, actually, the tools themselves are more specialized than most run-of-the-mill hackers are interested in. What this was a toolkit specifically for a given scenario. That is, I've broken into an institution. I have control over the system administrator's computer, and now I want to truly control everything in the institution. There is a single choke point on the network, the firewall. And this was a whole bunch of tools designed for, I start at the sysadmin's computer, I take over the firewall, and once I take over the firewall, all the network traffic for the entire institution goes through my devices. I can spy on it, I can change things, I can use this to attack other computers in the institution. And so this, in terms of granting powers to other hackers, is not that big a deal. There's only really one exploit that isn't patched at this point that's of significance. It's more the message. The message is this is code that should be never leave the NSA. So much of what's in the archive is stuff not that you use to attack other computers, but stuff that the NSA person uses to help him in the process. So this is the stuff that runs on NSA systems and is stuff that shouldn't leave the control of the NSA at all. So that's why this is so scary. It's the message. It's not the contents of the files. It's that the contents exist outside the NSA at all.
Well, or the him or hers that could be, I mean, in play here. I mean, there's a number of unknowns. What do you make of this Kaspersky Files company, which developed this ability to use the auto run element of the Microsoft operating system to engage and hack into a system through some sort of printer doorway?
I'm not familiar with that one.
Do you know about this Kaspersky Labs?
Yes, they're a very reputable security firm in Russia. They're basically the Russian equivalent of Symantec. And they, like Symantec and like F-Secure, do a lot of work on discovering vulnerabilities and, more importantly for this, discovering the traces of attackers. So they're the ones that actually coined the term equation group to describe the NSA hacking tools that they saw on target systems.
The Kaspersky group that he's talking about, is it an oxymoron to say a reputable computer security firm in Russia?
Oh, well, it is very reputable.
Well, that's fine, but I'm just going to get Stephen's assessment here.
Yeah, there's this gray area that these places get on. I mean, this, to me, you know, Nick is right that it isn't so much the any immediate threat from the stuff in these encrypted files that, and then now the unencrypted one, which is, you know, dangerous to us. It is underlining the big mess that we're in cybersecurity there. And the fact that the NSA, you know, has, you know, all these, you know, 0-day exploits, which means, you know, the first time vulnerabilities that the manufacturer of the software hasn't had an opportunity to fix, underlines the difficulty we have there is when we have the system with a lot of vulnerabilities. And many governments, not just ours, but the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Russians, and then there's private hacking groups. They find out these vulnerabilities, and they attack us there. So you would think that, gee, if our government finds these vulnerabilities, that's a national security issue too, to make U.S. citizens vulnerable, to allow them to be vulnerable. Because there's these flaws that can be attacked there. But instead, what happens is when the NSA discovers a flaw, it's like finding an Easter egg in a game. They say, wow, we have this thing now, and we can use it to exploit the systems ourselves. And they sit on these vulnerabilities, but it isn't just the NSA that can use them. It's other groups, other countries, and other groups.
These are tools that are really hard to exploit. You have to be in the right position in a target's network. But they're very powerful when you do. And it's easy to write the exploits because the vulnerabilities are incredibly stupid. So under normal circumstances, I could actually see the NSA going, oh, this Cisco vulnerability, I don't want to release it to Cisco because it's more useful for me. And we hope that nobody else discovers it. The real question is, back in 2013, when the NSA lost all this data, the question is, did the NSA know about it? If the NSA knew about it and didn't tell Cisco, that's very bad, because it means that the NSA, after knowing that a hostile actor has access to the same exploit, didn't notify a U.S. company that greatly affects U.S. security.
So,
if the NSA didn't know about this, this means that somewhere 3 months after Snowden went public and they were in the most defensive mode altogether, somebody was able to walk out with 300 megabytes of stuff.
Of even more dangerous stuff in the post-Snowden moment there. Well, Nick Weaver and Stephen Levy, we don't have any more time, but is the barn on fire and the doors are open and the horses have already escaped? I mean, is this a moment that we cannot go back in time except, you know, in the Matrix, Stephen?
I think that we have to go in a different direction in order to secure ourselves, because we're in, you know, a wildly vulnerable situation there. And the government, I think our government, has concentrated too much on offense and not enough on defense.
Nick?
I think that it's a bit more complicated. But one thing that this tells me is that the security vendors themselves, the firewall vendors themselves, are writing horrid code that's supposed to defend us. So the firewall vulnerability in the Cisco product is so stupid and basic, you teach it to undergrads.
So firewall made out of paper.
Yes, literally. It's a firewall with a blunder that we knew shouldn't have been done 30 years ago.
Nick Weaver is a researcher at the International Computer Science Institute, speaking to us from Berkeley, California. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
And Stephen Levy is editor-in-chief of Backchannel. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.